Blog Talk Radio.
Pretty much till they kick me out the booth, and we pretty much amazing.
What's up? What's up? Welcome in to another edition of Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio. Happy to have you with me tonight. You can also follow me on the Twitter machine at MMP underscore DA. That's MMP underscore DAAA. Like and follow the Facebook page, Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck. Follow on Instagram for pictures at Chi-Town Chatter. Subscribe to my YouTube channel for all of my sports videos and for all of my previous podcasts and content. Check out that website, www.chitownchatter.com. Chi-Town Chatter is brought to you by Binny's Beverage Depot. Remember, if you cannot find it at Binny's, it's probably not worth drinking. Happy Wednesday, Chicago. We got some 2-for-1 action tonight. The Bulls tipping off against the Washington Wizards right now. Game time decision, Derrick Rose. Fred Hoiberg says he will play after missing the past couple of games with that groin strain. Mike Dunleavy, who missed the previous game because of a stomach bug, will also be back in the lineup tonight. Still no Pau Gasol, who is also expected to miss the second half of their back-to-back tomorrow when they host the Brooklyn Nets. The Bulls hung on to beat the Raptors Monday night despite another late meltdown. They were propelled early on by Doug McDermott, who finished with 29 points, one shy of his career high. But in this disappointing Bulls season, this silver lining, at least a silver lining, is the significant improvement we've seen from Doug McDermott's game over the last couple of months. He's starting to look like a guy who was worth trading up in the draft to get. In hockey, the Blackhawks trying to end their 3-game losing streak tonight as they host the Philadelphia Flyers. The puck drops at 7 p.m. Central Time. The Hawks were shut out 5-0 at home by the L.A. Kings on Monday. Coach Joel Quenneville might shake up his line tonight. And yes, that might also even mean mixing up that second line of Kane, Panarin, and Anisimov that has been so steady all season long. But this team is in desperate need of a win to keep pace in the Central Division, to try and climb back on top of St. Louis and Dallas. Things have gone from bad to worse for the Blackhawks. The penalty kill is still hopeless despite a decent showing against the Kings, and their once mighty power play has gone ice cold. The Hawks are no stranger to mid and late season slumps, however. They've been there before. Can they break out of this slump? Is this one different? Is this one worse? Will this one be harder to overcome? We'll talk about that. A bit of housekeeping at Halas Hall, the Bears signing long snapper Aaron Brewer to a 1-year deal earlier today. He spent the last 4 years with the Denver Broncos under previous Broncos coach John Fox and new Bears special teams coordinator Jeff Rogers, who came along with John Fox over from Denver. New long snapper for the Bears special teams. March Madness is underway. Yesterday's first 4 games saw both Wichita State and Florida Gulf Coast get dominant wins to punch their tickets to the round of 64. Holy Cross and Southern are live right now. 8.5 minutes left in the first half. Holy Cross leads Southern 18-7. That game is on True TV. Kind of funny how 350 days of the year we all forget that True TV exists and is a channel. And then, oh, the tournament's back. Oh, right, True TV. That's a thing. And then to round out the first 4 games later tonight, Michigan and Tulsa tip off at 8:10 Central Time. Open phone lines throughout the show, 347-327-9183. Let's begin tonight with the NFL. New development in the league's ongoing relationship or lack thereof with CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy. During a roundtable discussion on concussions held by the United States House of Representatives Committee on Energy and Commerce on Monday, the NFL's Vice President of Health and Safety, Jeff Miller, admitted that there is indeed a link between football, head trauma, and CTE.
Well, certainly Dr. McKee's research shows that a number of retired NFL players are diagnosed with CTE, so the answer to that question is certainly yes.
Face the truth! Show that you free!
Now, Jeff Miller tried in some form to immediately backtrack from admitting to that in these concussion talks with the U.S. House of Reps Committee on Energy and Commerce. There was a question posed to him, and it was a simple yes or no question. He answered yes, then somewhat backtracked. And then when the representative, who actually was Representative Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, asked him, well, if you're admitting to this now, then why did just a month or so ago somebody else on behalf of the NFL during Super Bowl week still deny that CTE has any link to the NFL and playing football and head trauma? Because that is what Dr. Mitch Berger, a neurosurgeon who leads the NFL subcommittee on long-term brain injury, said during an interview Super Bowl week just a month ago. So when posed that question by Representative Schakowsky, here was Jeff Miller's follow-up response.
I'm not going to speak for Dr. Berger.
You're speaking for the NFL, right?
You asked the question as whether I thought there was a link, and I think certainly based on Dr. McKee's research, there's a link because she's found CTE in a number of retired football players. I think that the broader point, and the one that your question gets to, is what that necessarily means and where do we go from here with that information. And so when we talk about a link or you talk about the incidence or the prevalence, I think that some of the medical experts around the table, just for the record, I'm not a medical physician, so I feel limited here, or a scientist. I feel limited in answering much more than that other than the direct answer to your question.
I would
refer to a number of the people around the table as to you know, what the science means around the question that you're asking.
That was NFL VP of Health and Safety Jeff Miller with his follow-up question, the question posed by Representative Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, whose voice you also heard in that soundbite. She said, you are speaking on behalf of the NFL, after he said, I don't want to speak for Dr. Mitch Berger. However, he then said nothing about speaking for the NFL. Not one thing. Completely dodged that part of her question. Why? You asked me this question. It was a yes or no question. I said yes, and I don't feel comfortable speaking in any further detail on the matter, is basically what he said. And still, this was significant because it was the first time that an NFL senior official conceded any connection between football and CTE. And then yesterday, following Miller's Monday statement, the NFL issued this statement, quote, the comments made by Jeff Miller yesterday accurately reflect the view of the NFL, reaffirming his statement, his concession, that yes, according to this research, there is a link. Berger, the neurosurgeon who leads that NFL subcommittee on long-term brain injury, made that statement just a month ago, that there is still no established link between football and CTE. A neurosurgeon who works for the NFL. His job is to research brain injuries for the NFL, for the league. And he, just a month ago, denied the link to CTE. But Jeff Miller couldn't very easily deny it at these House of Representatives concussion talks on Monday, because shortly before he was posed that yes or no question by the representative, the same question was posed to Dr. Ann McKee, who you heard him reference, a neuropathologist at Boston University. And she said that she has diagnosed CTE in brains of 176 people, 90 of 94 former NFL players. Of the 176 she diagnosed, of 94 NFL players whose brains she has studied, 90 came back positive for CTE. 45 of 55 college football players and 6 of 26 high school football players. And that is perhaps the newest development as we are still learning more about CTE, is just how young you can develop it. Because until recently, it was thought to not appear until later stages of life. Now they're finding it in high school kids who are playing football and have have passed away. So after hearing those numbers from Dr. Ann McKee, Jeff Miller basically had no choice but to say, well, certainly, according to those numbers, yes, there is a link. 90 out of 94 who played football showed signs of CTE. I have to say yes because of things like research and numbers. So the big question and the big criticism bearing down on the NFL right now is, what took them so long to admit this?
What took you so long?
The NFL should be embarrassed to have this much egg on their face after this.
Hey, how much for that fat guy in the circle? I don't see a price tag on that. That's you. Oh, embarrassing.
Just no sense. After all of this time denying, now at these talks to finally say, turns out those doctors were all right, and football can cause some pretty serious health issues later in life, and one of those can be CTE, a horrible, horrible disease with awful symptoms that start at depression and lead all the way to dementia and often cause suicidal thoughts, if not suicide itself. And it's the timeline that's really hard to forgive. Because in the early 2000s, this problem started showing up. There was the other neuropathologist, Dr. Bennett Omalu, the man who is portrayed by Will Smith in that movie Concussion that just came out this past Christmas time. He was working on this in the early 2000s. He worked on the brain of deceased former NFL player Mike Webster, among many others. And in 2005, he published his first findings in a neurosurgery journal. Back in 2005, he made his first publication on this study. He released his second paper on a different case in 2006. Between 2008 and 2010, 12 autopsies of former NFL players all showed evidence of CTE. 12 of 12. Duh. Hello. Earth to the NFL.
Earth to Mikas. Duh. Okay. I knew that. Earth to Prince. I'm not so sure you did, because you were all, well, I'm sure he's heard of styling gel. Like, you didn't know it was a joke. I knew it was a joke, Mikas. I just didn't get it right away.
Did the NFL pretend not to understand this? Or did they know very well that this was a real problem connected directly to their big cash cow, their football players, and choose to look the other way? And that is really the story of the movie Concussion, is the neuropathologist, Dr. Omalu, realizing this link and finding these things when he was performing these autopsies and bringing this information to the NFL, and the NFL doing everything it could to shut him up. Not just say, thanks for the thoughts, thanks for these great pieces of information, thanks for this data you brought us, but we're done here. Literally went out of their way to silence him because they saw him and this problem as a threat to their profits. So the NFL's subcommittee that is led by Dr. Berger must have been looking really hard the other way to not find any correlation when other respected doctors, scientific journalists around the country were finding it without looking all that hard.
Have you found them yet?
No, Lord Helmet. They're still not on the scanner.
Well, keep looking for them.
Pieces of evidence connecting the NFL and football and head trauma and CTE, I swear to God, we haven't found them yet. We've been looking everywhere. We've combed the desert. We just can't find them. It's embarrassing. The timeline is embarrassing. We are in 2016, and just 2 days ago, the NFL or one of their representatives for the first time admitted the link between CTE and their brand of professional football. Dr. Bennett Omalu was working on this in the early 2000s, published his first case on this topic more than a decade ago. The simultaneous timeline of the NFL denying and doing nothing, along with the timeline of what doctors were discovering about CTE, is a total and complete joke. Sort of as if the NFL is saying to itself now, well, how could we go back and fix not only the problem that exists here, but how can we also go back in time and fix our image, which has now taken quite a hit? When will we be able to do that? Now that we are here, now that we've arrived and we've admitted this problem, how do we go back and fix it?
What the hell am I looking at? When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
Past then.
When?
Just now. We're at now, now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Oh, Mel Brooks, bless your heart. So what does this mean for the NFL moving forward? Well, there was this big, humongous trial that recently settled. The lawsuit by the former players of the NFL that were suing the league for hiding this information. And that settled in April of 2015. And after a few different variations of what the settlement would be, the most recent one was, over the next 65 years or so, the NFL would pay out roughly $1 billion to the players and their families of the deceased players who were affected by CTE or other problems, health problems resulting from playing in the NFL. Now, that April 2015 settlement is being appealed by NFL players because it excludes future cases of CTE. Because the NFL's stance in the case that was settled was still to deny any specific link between football and CTE. When that case was settled in April of 2015, they were still, as a entity, the NFL, had not admitted any correlation. Now, Jeff Miller's comments from Monday directly contradict that stance in the settlement. And the NFL and their employee admitting this link to CTE and that risk means the settlement should theoretically, hypothetically, include compensation for present and future cases, not just prior deaths. But the catch-22, the problem there, is that CTE is still only identifiable. You can only diagnose it post-mortem. So while those numbers that Dr. Ann McKee presented to this House of Reps committee on Monday, 90 of 94 football players were found to have some level of CTE, that is a very high percentage, but it's not 100%. So why should the NFL give compensation, future or present compensation, to one of their players who plays in the NFL and, by some stroke of luck, does not develop CTE? It's an ugly, gross, slimy hypothetical and devil's advocate argument, but it is a legitimate one. Why should the NFL be paying out compensation to somebody for something they never end up getting? It's a giant mess. At least they finally admitted it when all of the signs were there and everyone was telling them, hey, look at these signs. Hey, stupid. Look at these signs. They finally admitted it about 48 hours ago. I mean, you could say it's a decade too late. You could say, based on the other problems the NFL faces and how it goes about dealing with them, that really, as what we should, when it comes to what we should expect from them, it's right on time. Either way, it's too late to give them any credit for finally admitting this.
I award award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Where the NFL chooses to go from here, now that they've finally admitted this correlation, well, we'll find out. They have done things in recent years to try to cut down on head injuries and head trauma. Concussion clearance protocol has gotten more strict and rigid, and there are head doctors on the sidelines for every NFL game so players can be immediately analyzed after taking what looks to be a dinger or suffering a concussion on the field of play. They're doing everything they can to make helmets safer. They are doing all of these things that allow them to say, we're working on it. But the fact that they just this week admitted to the big problem, I'm sorry, but that's pretty inexcusable. Let's take a quick timeout. We'll be back to talk some Bulls basketball as they battle the Wizards. They got a narrow win over the Raptors on Monday. They are clinging to their playoff lives. The big three of Pau Gasol, Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, well, they can't all stay on the floor at the same time. But at least we have Dougie McBuckets, who is having a strong turnaround to finish his season. That's what we're talking about on the other side. 347-327-9183 is the number. If you have any thoughts on our Bullies, you're listening to Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio. Stick around.
I'll be right back. Don't you go dying on me.
It's 3 hours till dinner and I'm starving. So hungry I could eat a horse. Covered in milk, chocolate, peanuts, caramel, and nougat. Whoa! Hold your horses. What I really need is a Snickers, packed to the max with peanuts and caramel. Snickers really satisfies.
25,000 mornings, give or take, is all we humans get. We spend them on treadmills, spend them in traffic. And if we get lucky, really lucky, it dawns on us to go spend them in a world where a simple sunrise can still be magic. 25,000 mornings. Make sure some of them are pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
Hey, it's me, Water. Did you know that if you filter me from your tap, I'm pretty much the same as I am in a plastic bottle? Except that I'm 10 times cheaper. Other than that, I'm pretty similar. Oh, and I'm fresher when I'm filtered. And I don't need an expiration date. And I don't have to get shipped halfway around the world. But other than that, we're pretty much the same. Pure Water Filter. A better source.
Welcome back to Chi-Town Chatter on Blog Talk Radio. Matt Peck hanging out with you on Wednesday evening as we get closer to puck drop between the Blackhawks and the Philadelphia Flyers. Right now, we are talking Bulls, though, and a score update for you. Bulls and Wizards are underway. Wizards leading the Bulls 18-10 midway through the first quarter. And for your NCAA tournament score update, Holy Cross leading Southern 27-22 as they approach halftime. Is anyone else sick of these Bulls, this Bulls season, talking about them? Well, let's go to the phone lines, see what the fans have to say. You're on the air with Chi-Town Chatter. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Zach from L.A. How's it going?
Hey, Zach. Great to hear from you again, buddy. I was getting ready to, you know, talk some shit about the Bulls. What's on your mind?
I don't know. Again, it's hard to really say what's going on with the Bulls. I mean, they're good some days, bad others. They're losing players one day, they're getting players back another. It's just kind of a roller coaster, man. I mean, McDermott has been impressing a lot, man. He had a great game, but it was also good to see the bench kind of take over that game. I mean, the last 2 minutes wasn't the prettiest, but, you know, for the most part, they seemed to dominate. So
that's
the
nicest way you could have put it, describing the final minutes of that game against the Raptors. I mean, they almost coughed up a double-digit lead with what, 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
Not the prettiest. I could find a different phrase or two to describe it. But at least they managed to hold on and get a win on the road against a good Toronto team.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I mean, you know, if we managed to shut down DeMar DeRozan, Terrence Ross, all those guys for the most part, and then they kind of just took over that fourth quarter a bit. They finally found their juice. But yeah, I mean, you know, we kept them in check, which is good. I mean, they're a solid team in the East, I guess, if you want to call the East solid right now.
It's basically the only other team in the East other than Cleveland that kind of sometimes is worth talking about.
Exactly,
they happen to be the number two seed and they have a really good home record.
Yeah.
So here we are. We're in a virtual tie with Detroit in the eighth spot, Zach. I think the Bulls are 33-32. They're 34-33. So essentially the same record. Do you even want to see the Bulls make the playoffs? Would you rather they fall out of the playoffs to hopefully inspire and incite a greater amount of change this coming offseason? It would be the first time in 7 or 8 years that the Bulls miss the playoffs. Do you still want to see them sneak in, see what they do in the first round? Or are you like me, dude, I don't even want to watch. If the Bulls make the playoffs as a 7 or 8 seed, I'm going to be like, whoop-de-fucking-do. I don't even want to watch because they will disappoint us.
Well, as much as I want to hate on them, and it's frustrating, and I've definitely stopped watching a lot of the games just because, you know, you can only take so much. But part of me is curious to see how we would do in the playoffs, you know, especially if we get everybody. Obviously Noah's not coming back, but, you know, we get Powell back and then we get everyone sort of healthy and ready to go to it. I'm kind of interested to see how we would do. Do I think we'll do well? Probably not. But, you know, I think that this team has shown spurts, you know, sparks of being amazing. So I'm curious to see, you know, when the playoffs is on the line.
Amazing? Come on, Zach. I don't know if I could call any game that we've seen from this Bulls team amazing this season. Promising, good, bordering on. We're trying to think back to some of their best wins. I mean, they have wins over some of the best teams in the league. They've beaten the Spurs. They've beaten the Thunder twice. They've beaten the Clippers. They've beaten the Cavs. They swept Toronto. They beat Toronto every single game this season. And yet none of them, I recall them being like dominant games that I was like, wow, this Bulls team is really good. Just like, well, they played a decent enough game and the opponent played a game that was not their best.
For sure. I get that, yeah. And, you know, again, maybe I'm just, you know, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I want to see him go.
Don't lie. You want to watch. If the Bulls make the playoffs, you want to watch.
We're going to be honest. I don't want to see basketball end, you know? And it's like I've really just been following the Bulls all year, you know? So it's like, you know, they're my only this year. So it's like, I kind of want to see what they can do. Even though I don't hold much hope in it, it's just a slight curiosity. So if they go, I don't know.
It depends really on the matchup, because obviously if they finish 8, they're losing to Cleveland. Like they might not even win a game against Cleveland. But if they finish with the 7 seed and Toronto hangs on to the 2 seed, we watched the Bulls sweep Toronto this season. They've beaten the Raptors 9 games in a row dating back to all the way last season. For whatever reason, the Bulls have the Raptors number. So after a horribly disappointing season, the Bulls could come into a 2-7 matchup as the 7, and who knows, they might sweep that series 4-0. But on either end of that, even if you go to the 3-6, if somehow the Bulls jump all the way to 6, I think there's not a very high chance that happens. But Boston in the 3 seed, and they look really good. Boston's been playing the best basketball out there over the last month or so. I wouldn't give the Bulls much of a chance against Boston. No chance against Cleveland. But maybe if they just wind up with Toronto in that 2-7, all of a sudden you're looking at the Bulls being back in the second round of the playoffs.
True. Very true. I think overall, though, I think, Cleveland, yes, you know, they're obviously the deadly contender. But overall, I feel like the East is just, it's just such a gray area. Like, you just don't, like, in the West, you know who's good. You know who's good. And, you know, people could be streaking right now. Teams could be doing well. But, you know, you go and look at, you know, teams like last year, like Atlanta, who was dominating all year, and then they just, like, imploded when they played Cleveland. Yeah. Like, just
nobody gave them a chance against Cleveland. They're like, yeah, no, they're not. That's not happening.
So that's the thing. It's hard to be, all right, the Bulls are out, because it's at least up until, you know, the conference finals or finals or whatever, depending, you know, if they don't play Cleveland, it's hard for me to say the Bulls are out necessarily, because all those teams, you know, have had their high points, but they've definitely had their low points in the year. So it's like, I don't know. It's a tough call, and it's tough to say who could do it. But, you know, I again, I'm curious to see what happens. I guess that's all you can really do this year. It's just kind of, obviously a lot of change needs to happen, but, you know, it's like, you know, as a fan,
I'm going to hold you to your word, Zach. When you and I checked in with one another after game one of the first round and the Cavs beat the Bulls by 40, I'm going to ask you if you still have any interest in watching the rest of that series.
All right. I respect that. I'll go along with that then. You know, that's fine.
Well, and hopefully whatever happens to the Bulls, we can watch the Blackhawks go a bit further than whatever it is the Bulls end up doing.
Agree, you know, yeah. Hopefully they get past this little skid they're on right now and get back to kicking butt. So
that's
yeah.
Right. Big game against the Flyers tonight. All right, Zach. Well, thanks for checking in, buddy. Always a pleasure.
No problem. Thank you, Matt. Take care.
You too, bud. There it is. Zach, out in L.A., diehard Bulls fan. Always nice talking to him, because like myself, he is a Bulls optimist. Always has been, always will be. But this season, I have just found it so difficult to be a Bulls optimist. There is just so much bad. It's not just the usual string of injuries that kept creeping in and ruining things for the Bulls in this last season, the season before that, the season before that. It's the direction that they seem to be heading. A new coach that can't seem to get his players to do what he wants them to do. A new star in Jimmy Butler. A new ego in Jimmy Butler, whose isolation basketball doesn't fit with Fred Hoiberg's offense. The complete abandonment of anything relating to the word defense with the departure of Tom Thibodeau. A general lack of effort and focus. Turnovers, watching game after game where the Bulls are tallying somewhere between 15 and 23 turnovers, especially down the stretch late in games. As Zach and myself were just talking about, they almost coughed this one up to Toronto on Monday. Terrible fourth quarters against the Spurs and the Heat last week, and they came into those fourth quarters basically even. I think they were trailing the Spurs, but by single digits, and they were right there neck and neck with the Heat. And they threw the ball away a million times, and they stopped playing defense, and they got blown out in the fourth quarter both of those games. Then Monday against Toronto, they managed to have a double-digit lead halfway through that fourth quarter, and then poof, that double-digit lead vanishes. The Raptors finish the game on a 15-7 run, and the Bulls need a desperation swipe at the ball by Jimmy Butler, who was guarding DeMar DeRozan as he was making his way to the basket to try to get a layup that would have sent this game into overtime. No closing in the fourth quarter. Just cherry on top of the crap Sunday that is all the problems the Bulls have, and it's hard to be an optimist. This completed the intriguing sweep of the Raptors. Another win over Toronto. The last time they were in Toronto was Jimmy Butler's Bulls franchise record-setting 40-point half when the Bulls came back from their own double-digit deficit on the shoulders of Jimmy Butler, one of the greatest performances Bulls fans have seen recently. Doesn't matter what Toronto does, they can't beat our stinking, lousy Bulls for whatever reason. So if the Bulls get their act together enough to hold off Detroit, to maybe leapfrog Indiana and find themselves in the seventh seed against the second-seeded Raptors, well, the Bulls and their fans would be looking at a second-round playoff exit again. Something for Gar and Pax to hang their hat on again. Does anybody want that to happen? I don't. But the silver lining, there was a silver lining Monday night other than a technical victory. It's the play of Doug McDermott. Really stepped up in the last couple of months. He had 24 of his team high 29 in the first half to get the Bulls off on the right foot Monday night. He started in the first half making all six of his field goal attempts and shooting 7 of 8 from the free throw line. Dude even had a 4-point play. And as I mentioned, one shy of his career high 30, which also came against the Toronto Raptors back in February. Here's McDermott, his big performance.
I just was in that zone, you know, everything I shot felt good after I made my first couple, and you know, I was happy I was able to help my teammate. I played really well against them in Summer League in Vegas. You know, it's just, I don't know, something about it, you know, matchup, it's not getting anything against them. I just play well against them.
I don't know what it is. Whether it's McDermott or the Bulls as a group, whatever it is about Toronto, they like it. But McDermott really seems to be gaining confidence. Attacking, not just shooting the ball, which is his forte. It was supposed to be Fred Hoiberg's favorite little pupil, because just like Hoiberg, he's a three-point specialist. But in the early stages of the season, most of his entire rookie season, which was really took a hurt because of his injury and then fell out of the rotation. And then even once he came back from the injury, Tom Thibodeau said, sorry, Rook, you're not getting minutes. Here we are nearing the end of his second season, and McDermott is finally starting to look like a player. Attacking the basket. Not just shooting the ball more confidently, attacking the basket. Amid all the injuries to key guys, Butler, Rose, now Pau Gasol, Dunleavy for the first two-thirds of the season, Bulls need a constant somewhere. And Doug recently has answered the call. It's sort of Doug's heroic Quail Man transformation, if you will.
That's the quail call, the cry of someone in trouble.
I just referenced the Nickelodeon show. Doug, big whoop, want to fight about it? Show is great. Quail Man, a hero. Hero of the people. But look at some of the stats that Dougie has piled up recently. He's got double-digit points in 13 of his last 18 games. Doesn't sound all that impressive until you think that the previous 47 games this season, the first 47 games this season, he only reached double digits 17 times. 17 out of 47, now 13 out of the last 18. Before the All-Star break, he was averaging 8.3 points per game, shooting 43.5% from the field. Post-All-Star break, 13.6 points per game and 49.3% from the field. Adding 5 points on his scoring average and bumping up his shooting percentage by 6. That's big time. Think about that, his 3-point shooting percentage has actually dipped a bit between before the All-Star break and after. That means he's getting more good looks from other spaces on the floor, not just from behind the three-point line. At some point, Doug McDermott realized that he's not just some little shrimp that whose job it is to just stand outside the three-point line and wait for somebody to pass him and then catch and shoot. Now he's gaining the guts to go to the hoop. He's not backing down to any NBA bullies any NBA veterans who were looking at him and scoffing, not being afraid of the multifaceted aspects of Doug McDermott's game. He's sort of having his junior moment. He's seeing pride in himself.
I see pride.
Yeah, I hear you.
I see power. I see a badass mother who won't take no crap off of nobody.
Once again.
I see pride.
Junior.
I see power. I see a badass mother who won't take no crap off of nobody.
That's very
right. Junior Bedell.
Wait, where are you going?
Junior. I see pride. Oh, God. Gets me every time. That's sort of, can't you just see Doug McDermott standing in front of a mirror at his own bathroom at his house, sort of giving himself a pep talk like Junior from Cool Runnings? I could be better than I am, gosh darn it. Whatever he did, and maybe it was the little pep talk he got from Fred Hoiberg before, I think it was maybe before his big 30-point outburst against Toronto last month. But before that game, Fred said, hey, love what I saw at practice the other day. Shoot around. Just shoot the ball. You're looking good. Be aggressive. Be confident. I have faith in you. Maybe that's what McDermott needed, a vote of confidence from coach. But the last month or so, the last couple of months, we've just seen this big uptick in Doug's game. And his three-point shooting on the season of 42%, that's seventh best in the NBA. Combine his good shooting from outside. He was 4-5 from downtown on Monday. Adding these other elements to his game, he's making backdoor cuts. He's even occasionally putting the ball on the floor and getting to the hoop on the dribble. Noticeable improvements to Doug's game that, like Monday, were a big help in getting this team a much-needed win, is a silver lining of this shit season. Looks like the Bulls didn't make a mistake trading up to get him after all. The Bulls still have to figure out what they want to be, and they have to play like they care. But what happens next season, regardless of who else is around, Doug is proving to be a valuable piece to build around moving forward. In the meantime, we're forced to watch fourth quarters like the one we saw Monday, filled with stupidity, either letting the opponent closed the door on us, as the Spurs and Heat did last week, or failing to close the door on our opponent, as we did with Toronto. Watching the Bulls trying to finish any game that they bring a lead into the fourth quarter this season, watching them try to close out games, it's honestly a joke. It's so aggravating, because they make it so much harder than it has to be. Monday's game, watching them just stumble and trip their way to a narrow victory, I felt like Robert De Niro, who's watching, waiting for his steak to be put in front of him in Raging Bull.
Yeah, I just said don't overcook it. You're overcooking it. Bring it over.
You want your steak?
Bring it over. Bring it over. It's like a piece of charcoal. Bring it over here.
Bring it over here. Just bring it over. Close the door. Get the win. What are you doing dancing around? You're overcooking the steak. Don't overcook it. Don't overcomplicate it. The Bulls, this season, anytime they're on the verge of victory in the fourth quarter, they just do things to make your head heavy. And part of that is Hoiberg, I think, is not a great late-game coach. And the Bulls, with their inability to – there was a five-second call they got against them Monday night. Justin Holiday with the inbound. The Bulls couldn't get the ball inbounds coming out of a timeout. Hoiberg's effectiveness drawing up plays and getting points out of timeouts is near the bottom of the barrel when it comes to NBA coaches this season. They don't know what they're doing in the fourth quarter. People jack up shots. They go ISO with Roser Butler. Everybody panics. It's terrible. Don't overcook it. Just get the win. For the love of God. What will we see from the Bulls tonight in the fourth quarter? Well, we'll find out before too long. Let's take one more break. I'll have a score update for you on the other side between the Bulls and the Wizards. Also, some breaking news from Hallis Hall that just hit moments ago. I'll have that on the other side. We'll also talk some Blackhawks and their three-game losing streak. 347-327-9183 is the number. You're listening to Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio.
I say we walk from the lake and go down the pool. On to the next to dance with the pool. Jump on my shoulders. You can jump on my shoulders. We walk from the lake and go down the pool. On to the next.
I love you.
Oh, that's so nice.
Really? I made these for you. They're just brownies.
Could I have one?
Go ahead.
No.
What? You don't like brownies?
No.
I'm sorry. I can't understand you.
No.
Mick?
No.
You're seeing someone else.
No.
A guy named Mick.
No.
I can't believe it. Hey, my name is Scott.
No.
Scott, look, I gotta go. I hope Mick likes brownies.
Got milk. Brought to you by America's Dairy Farmers.
Nothing's funny about gout flares. Though they can make you walk funny, or sport that hilarious open-toed sneaker of yours. Those are serious attempts to live with gout flares. But why live with them? Visit gout.com and find better ways to fight flares over time.
Budweiser commercial featuring the crew cut.
Where there's life, there's fun. At a concert or a show, in your own backyard, wherever you go. Budweiser's beer is for folks who know where there's life. There's Budweiser.
Welcome back to Chi-Town Chatter on Blog Talk Radio. Matt Peck here with you Wednesday evening, getting you ready for puck drop between the Blackhawks and Flyers. But first, some breaking news out of Halas Hall just moments ago. The Bears announced that they have agreed on terms of a trade that will send tight end Martellus Bennett to the New England Patriots. Marty B. been on the trading block, on the chopping block for, well, basically since he boycotted the OTAs last offseason. Is apparently finally on his way out of Chicago. Looks like the Bears and Patriots will be swapping late-round picks as part of the trade. So perhaps the Bears are getting a fourth round or a fifth round for sending the Patriots Marty B. and a sixth round, something like that. Official finalized details on the deal haven't come out yet. This news just hit moments ago. But there it is, Martellus Bennett. The Bears finally found a taker. It's funny because what do you think of when you think of the Patriots? Well, you think of Tom Brady, and then the second name on the field, not Bill Belichick, but the second name on the field is Rob Gronkowski. What are they going to do with Martellus Bennett? Because if that answer is make Marty B block for Tom Brady because Tom Brady just got his shit pushed in by the Denver Broncos pass rush in that playoff game, Marty B is not going to be too happy about that because he was bitching and moaning in Chicago about not getting enough targets and having to do too much blocking, helping out the offensive line. Well, Tom Brady's offensive line needs help. They just also traded Chandler Jones, who had 12.5 sacks for them last season, to bring in another piece for their offensive line. That's clearly their priority 1A this offseason is to help protect Tom Brady, who is another year older. So Marty B demands a trade and gets sent to the Patriots where he will play behind the greatest tight end in all the land, the freak tight end who is on a different level of any other tight end in football, and he's probably going to be asked to block for Tom Brady. Oh, karma is a bitch. That is hilarious. Well, au revoir, Marty B. It was fun while it lasted. Best of luck to you out on the East Coast. And I told you I'd have a score update for you, Bulls and Wizards. Bulls, after being down early in the first quarter, have climbed their way back into this game. They lead the Wizards 43-40, 7 minutes left in the first half. So, with that, let's talk some Blackhawks. They dropped the puck against the Flyers in just about 10 minutes. They're trying to end their three-game losing streak, all three losses coming at the hands of potential playoff opponents, Western Conference teams. Most recently, 5-0 at home against the LA Kings. What is going on with these Hawks? Now, some in Chicago are saying panic. Press that panic button and press it quickly. Press it a zillion times. Others saying, hey, the Blackhawks, these are the Blackhawks. They're defending cup champions, a roster full of veterans. They've got time. They'll figure it out. Stay calm.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm.
Wait.
Everybody calm down.
All right, let's everybody just calm the down.
But it's hard to stay calm right now if you've watched these last three Blackhawks losses. Another bad start, another early deficit on Monday. They gave up two goals to the Kings early in the first period, just three and a half minutes in, and they gave up two goals 18 seconds apart to start this game. And once they had a nice multiple-goal lead, the Kings just played physical. They played great defense. They protected their lead, and while doing so, out-hit the Hawks 46-23. Anytime the Blackhawks tried to get any of their fancy skating into that offensive third, the Kings put a squash to it, literally. And then they padded their lead with another goal in the second and two more in the third. The Blackhawks looked completely lifeless out there.
Sir, are you classified as human?
Negative. I am a meat popsicle.
Blackhawks looks like meat popsicles on ice skates against the Kings on their home ice. Big time game against a Western Conference opponent, the Kings leading the Pacific Division out west, a team that the Blackhawks have a pretty significant rivalry with, owe them a payback for dispatching the Blackhawks in that overtime game 7 of the Western Conference Finals 2 seasons ago. These teams don't like each other. This should have been a game that the Blackhawks were geared up to play. Just had two division losses, fighting for their life to try to win the Central, and the LA Kings come to town, and you lay out that egg of a performance? So, what did the meat popsicles on skates have to say after that loss to the Kings?
I think it's a little bit of a roller coaster sometimes. I think, obviously, we're in one of those lulls. I think we're not going to get out of it by just feeling sorry for ourselves. We're gonna get out of it by, you know, getting a little bit pissed off or whatever you want to say. Just get a little bit of anger, get a little bit more fight in our game.
That's Blackhawks forward Andrew Desjardins saying they need to get pissed off. That would certainly help. They didn't look like they cared playing against the Kings on Monday. They were getting bullied around, and they got bullied around by the Dallas Stars last week. And after a quick and lucky 1-0 lead against St. Louis, they got bullied around by them too. What about Captain Serious? He must be taking this fairly seriously.
A tough couple of games, but I think we've seen that before. We've been through that before. We know not to overreact and start second-guessing ourselves and really letting that lack of confidence really creep in our minds. So we'll just keep working and we'll work through it, and eventually we'll earn those bounces back.
And Jonathan Toews is right. That's the captain after the loss to the Kings. The Blackhawks have had these little slumps before. And at this time of the year, mid-season, late season, last year they lost 5 of 7 in one stretch of February. They also lost their final 4 games of the regular season to finish out April leading into the playoffs. And I had forgotten that entirely because we watched them march through the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup. But they lost their last 4 regular season games and 5 of 7 back in February. In the 2013-14 season, they lost 5 of 6, spanning the end of January and into February. Then they lost 4 of 5 in March, and then went all the way to the Western Conference Finals Game 7 against the Kings. When they won their first cup of this run with this core in 2010, that 2009-2010 season, they lost 7 of 9 in one stretch of March, and went on to win the Stanley Cup. So Taser's right. They've been there before. They've had these slumps at this stretch of the season where they're kind of, the playoffs are in sight, but they still have to slog through the last 15 or 20 games, and they hit this bump in the road. They've been able to correct them in the past. Can they do it again? The problems keep popping up. First, it was the penalty kill. which right now is 25th among all NHL teams at just 78.5%. One little positive blip on that radar is that they did not, in fact, allow any power play goals to the Kings on Monday. But they allowed 5 goals. So, not a great pat on the back for that. Now, and they gave up multiple power play goals to the Blues and the Stars last week. Now, their power play, which was first coming into this 3-game losing streak, has gone cold. They shut the Kings out on the power play. The Kings only had 2. The Blackhawks went 0-for-6 on the power play on Monday. And they are now just 1-for-15 with their odd man advantage over the last few games. 1-of-15. And they have fallen all the way to the 3rd-ranked power play in the league with this recent dry spell. As I mentioned, all even-strength goals for the Kings. The Blackhawks' 5-on-5 goal differential is another problem. Right now, the Hawks' 5-on-5 differential through the first, whatever we have, 65, 70 games of the season, is -5, 23rd in the NHL. Last regular season, their 5-on-5 goal differential of +21 was the 3rd best such differential in the NHL. Playoff team's goal differential, well, the Stanley Cup champion Blackhawks had the best 5-on-5 goal differential in the playoffs. Different story this season. And it's just one of many problems for the Blackhawks. Everything has been bad and has gone wrong in this losing streak.
Everything you're doing is bad. I want you to know this.
Vigo! Everything you're doing is bad. The Blackhawks, everything they've done in this 3-game losing streak, 3 very important games, it's all bad. We've seen bad penalty kill. We've seen bad power play. We've seen bad 5-on-5 hockey. Team has lost its magic. It's mojo. It's whatever you want to call it.
Lost. Lost what? I've lost my marbles.
The Blackhawks have lost their marbles. They've lost them good. So much so that it looks like Coach Q might be shaking things up for tonight's game. Mixed up his lines of practice yesterday, and we might see new lines tonight, including the seemingly untouchable second line of Kane, Anisimov, and Panarin.
We're looking for balance right now. We're looking for consistency in the 4-line rotation, and playing major league catch-up is not productive hockey, and I think we've got to find a way what got us into those areas or ways, and we tried balancing it out with the lines here and changed it up on a couple of guys that one line's been together all year. And there was probably never a need to change it. But I feel right now a different look can help everyone and give us more balance throughout the lineup.
That's Blackhawks head coach Joel Quenneville at yesterday's practice. Now, you heard him say never really needed to change that second line. And he's right. He has a point. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That line of Kane, Panarin, and Anisimov for the entirety of this NHL season up until about 7 days ago was the best line in hockey and the most productive line in hockey. So why change that? Tinker with the first, third, and fourth lines? Absolutely. But now, even in this 3-game losing streak, the second line has hit a little slump. Patrick Kane is without a point in these last 3 games. That is his longest drought of the season. Just 3 games, longest drought of the season for Kaner. Artem Anisimov, he has just 1 goal in his last 14, and Artemi Panarin has just 1 point in these last 3 losses. That second line, like the rest of the team, has hit some kind of slump. And yesterday at practice, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, and Thomas Fleischman, the newcomer from Montreal, were skating together on the top line. That's weird. We've seen Coach Q pair Kane and Toews together when this team needs a jump start, when their battery's dead and they need something. Take my best player and my other best player and put them together, see what happens. Usually something good. So could we see Kane and Toews play more on the same line tonight? And interesting, will we see them playing with Thomas Fleischman, who was really supposed to come in as a third-line guy? Desperate times. desperate measures. The Blackhawks are 3 points behind the Stars and the Blues.
Times call for desperate measures, my lord. Desperate measures.
I love the Sultan when his voice when he's hypnotized. Yes, desperate measures. 3 points behind. The Blackhawks are desperate right now. This is the stretch, the final stretch of a very tight race. 3 points behind the Blues and the Stars. Now the Nashville Predators are creeping up behind the Blackhawks. Nashville has gotten points in 9 of their last 10 games. Now they're just 5 points back of Chicago. The Blackhawks have a tough test tonight. The Flyers had a slow start to the season, but they have won 7 of their last 10, and they are fighting for their playoff life, just one point behind the Detroit Red Wings for the second wild card spot in the Eastern Conference right now. They are hungry, and they are playing good hockey. They won't make it easy for the Blackhawks to end its losing streak tonight. 2 points on the table that both of these teams desperately need. And the puck drops right now. 7:01 Central Time. Just a quick note, Scott Darling is in net for the Blackhawks. Coach Q, no benching or injury to Corey Crawford, just giving him the night off. Wanted to give Scott Darling a home start, which he hadn't had in a while. So Darling is our netminder for this evening. No podcast on Friday night this week, folks. I will be on my way to Atlantic City to mourn the loss of my college buddy's bachelorhood. Sometimes these things just come up. I'll be back next week, though, with my take on what's going on in March Madness and plenty more. This has been Chi-Town Chatter on Blog Talk Radio. Matt Peck saying you can follow me on Twitter, MMP_DAAA. Like and follow the Facebook page. Follow on Instagram for pictures at Chi-Town Chatter. Subscribe to the Matt Peck YouTube channel for all of my videos. And for all of my previous podcasts and content, check out the website, www.chitownchatter.com. Matt Peck saying thanks so much for listening. Happy St. Paddy's Day tomorrow, everybody. If you're going to drink, do so semi-responsibly. And let's go Blackhawks.